Welcome to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Join us for an in-depth look at Iowa agriculture. Here are your hosts, Dustin Hoffman and Anna Haster.
Well, welcome to another edition of Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. I am Dustin Hoffman. I'm kind of having to go solo this weekend, and no, it's not a Star Wars reference, because otherwise I'd be calling Anna Chewbacca, and she'd get upset about being called a Wookiee, probably. Anna is on the road here while we're recording, as we're all on the road this week. Again, the second week in a row where we've been kind of out and about. This week, of course, I got to talk with the Iowa Turkey Federation at their winter meetings, and I talked with Lynn Schabel. She is the president of the Iowa Turkey Federation. You know, it was interesting talking with her. She said 2019 has been relatively quiet in the turkey industry. And at first, you know, we talked that, you know, they're obviously, like a lot of ag groups, wanting to see these trade deals go through, but they did get market access to China back, which was a big deal for them. But, you know, the way 2019 has been, you know, as I said in the story I did earlier this week at iowaagnet.com, in 2019, for as bad as it was and for as much strain as it seemed to put on all of us, maybe having a quiet year isn't all that bad. Maybe that's a blessing in disguise. But again, a good talk with her. In fact, like I said, you can find that at iowaagnet.com. Of course, the big deal this week was USMCA. The Democrats in the House said they finally got a deal they were happy to sign off on. The AFL-CIO labor unions all signed off on it as well, which gives them a big thumbs up to any of the House Democrats that may have been wavering on it. And so we got news that you know, we could be seeing a House passing it as early as next week, only to have the Senate leader, Mitch McConnell, turn around and say, we won't be seeing it till after Christmas now in the Senate. Kind of upsetting, I know, for a lot in agriculture, because we've been waiting so long for the House to act. Now the Senate says they're not going to. Now there has also been calls from Senator Grassley, Senator Ernst, trying to get this reversed and try to get it done before the Christmas break. Of course, we can't guarantee anything. It's up to the Senate leader to decide when that happens. Of course, he said, if impeachment happens, they're definitely not going to touch anything until the trial is over. But of course, the Senate is bound by the Constitution to basically put all business aside until the impeachment trial is over. But again, USMCA moving, that is a good sign. Still no word on what's going to happen with China. Of course, you know, the president last week saying that he was perfectly fine dragging this out till after the 2020 election. Definitely not what farmers and a lot of people in agriculture want to hear. But they're, again, one of those things that not much we can do with it. Anna was at the Farmer to Farmer event over in Omaha this week. She is there for Farmers Business Network as they're putting on their fifth event over there in Omaha. And then I was on the road on Friday to Iowa State University's biomass fuel talk that they had over in Cedar Rapids. So a lot of things going on here at the network. Of course, we're still bringing you a lot of things that we've dealt with from last week, including this segment right now that Anna has, talking with Matt Deppe. He's the president of the Iowa Cattlemen's Association last week at their meetings.
As the year winds down, our farm broadcaster team will reflect on the past 365 days. Today, we have commentary from the Iowa Cattle Industry Leadership Summit, hosted last week by the Iowa Cattlemen's Association. Matt Deppe, Chief Executive Officer for the Iowa Cattlemen's Association, briefly touches on the struggles Iowa cattle producers faced this past year. A more in-depth version of his comments can be found in last week's episode of Weekend Ag Matters, which can be accessed online at iowaagnet.com under the podcast tab or through iTunes, Podbean, and Spotify. In addition to his comments from last week, Deppe talks about important topics the association plans to keep top of mind heading into the new year. Let's kick it over to Matt Deppe of the Iowa Cattlemen's Association. Matt, you guys have discussed policy that you're going to take into the new year. Tell us a little bit more about that.
We had a lot of discussion during our policy committee meetings, and when I say a lot, we went easily an hour and a half, 2 hours over our scheduled time, which is fine, and that's what this event is all about. Members take some time to get here, really center in on the facts and the topics, and then we make sure that our policy matches that. And typically, since it's the end of the year and we've done a lot of conversations throughout the year, we're matching up with the whole membership of the Iowa Cattlemen's Association and most times throughout the cattle industry in our state. Topic-wise, we had a lot of discussion on traceability, but really the focus there, I think, is more of an awareness piece. We surveyed the membership that were here in terms of the mandatory versus voluntary, and we'll look at what that is. But as we had that dialogue here and previous to here this fall on traceability, it's really about what's this look like? This is a different concept. It's not yet to that mandatory versus voluntary. We just want to make sure how we fit within the system so it's not something that sneaks up on us. At the same time, market fundamentals, that was probably the longest discussion and the most diverse discussion amongst members within each audience. Negotiated trade policy, we've got a little more new enhancement on that market transparency factor of negotiated trade versus formula, and quite a few policies that we're going to take some time and look into, pieces connected to transparency, connected to rules on mandatory price reporting. But I'd say at the end of the day, we've got to have a transparent market, whether that's Iowa or Texas or whatever. That transparency is going to help everyone, regardless of how you market your cattle. And so if no one else is going to move forward and ask these questions and look into this a certain way, we're certainly going to do it at the Cattlemen's Association.
Let's just talk about the hit that Iowa cattle producers took because of a little bit of a lack of transparency with those market prices this past year.
You know, the example is the Holcomb plant fire. So that plant purchases more formula type, transaction type cattle than negotiated. Those are contracts. They're set up several weeks, months before those cattle hit the kill floor, so to speak. And so those contracts have to be honored. So the plant goes down, you lose 5,000-6,000 head kill a day, and those cattle still have to be killed. So they have to go hit shackles other places. And I know there's expense involved with that, but that pulls the cattle buyer, the negotiated guy, out of the country in Iowa and puts us in a really precarious situation.
What are some of the pros and cons that you guys have listed for traceability?
Pros, we are talking very extensively on animal disease traceability. So I don't want to get into the discussion of whether, you know, it's a value-added proposition, domestic or foreign market. We're on animal disease traceability. But from a pros perspective, if we can better the current system, regardless if it's a very catastrophic animal health disease outbreak or a very typical one, we're doing good things for not only the livestock industry and the producers producing livestock and their bottom line, but we're also doing good things for government and being able to be more efficient and effective at their job. On the con side, and this is kind of where the devil's in the details and maybe where the questions kind of lie on. We're very proactive and entrepreneurial in our state, regardless of what sector of agriculture you're involved in. And so when you look at how our producers engage in a piece like this with data, they're asking questions. How do I improve the bottom line of my operation by using this technology to pull other data in there? And in those same discussions or those same questions, they're also saying, well, that's my data. And while it might be utilized to add a premium to a group of calves or a pen of feed yard steers, I want to have that option to open that digital gate, so to speak, and show that or not. So those are two really big pieces. And then if you just look overall, just the use of data over the whole industry and the diversity of size and inventory and what other things are going on in their operation, it's an educational thing, but it's not awareness. They understand what the gist is. It's more of a educational piece of how can I use this to best suit me outside of the animal disease traceability insurance policy.
All right, Matt, that's all the questions I had for you today. Anything else you'd like to add about policy here?
Influence is really our root at the Iowa Cattlemen's Association, and I just commend the folks that were able to get to Leadership Summit, that were able to get to listening sessions, that filled out a survey, that sent an email, made a phone call, those types of things throughout the year, because that's how we do that, and that's how we build that influence. That's how we find those engaged leaders. Those that would have witnessed the committee discussions, we're all getting to the family table. And yes, we might disagree on things, but we're open with one another. And at the end of the day, we know we got to work forward together.
That was Matt Deppe, Chief Executive Officer for the Iowa Cattlemen's Association. Stay tuned to Weekend Ag Matters for more news and information.
How many acres are you keeping an eye on? Another pair of eyes could be very helpful in protecting your ROI, especially ones that are highly trained. And that's what you'll get with an FS Crop Specialist. They can spot issues you might not even know you have using the latest technology, including thermal, drone, and NDVI imaging. Then they can get an early treatment plan started. Contact your local FS crop specialist to learn more about our crop scouting services. It's one more way FS is bringing you what's next.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters. Here's your host, Dustin Hoffman.
In 2018, California voters had a ballot proposition called Proposition 12, which changed the rules for some production agriculture, mainly in livestock. One of those areas was with sows, mandating that these sow units had to be bigger. The American Farm Bureau Federation and the National Pork Producers Council have filed a lawsuit against Proposition 12, stating that these arbitrary numbers have no basis in science. We talk now with MPPC Vice President Jen Sorensen, also an Iowa hog producer. So we're talking today about California, which I know has nothing to do with Iowa, you would normally think, except for when you're talking about marketing. And we're talking about Proposition 12, which is a ballot initiative that passed in 2018, which regulates how animal production is carried out for marketing in the state.
That's right. A little bit of background on Prop 12. It's a California ballot initiative that passed back in 2018. And the reason it's important to pork producers here in Iowa and across the U.S. is that Prop 12 applies to hen, veal, and sow housing, and it requires sows to have 21 feet of space. And, you know, this is a really arbitrary number for pork producers. You know, it really throws a giant wrench into our farming operations nationwide, because the law states that no raw pork can be sold into California unless it comes from pigs born from sows housed in compliance with California's new requirements here. So it's very problematic for Iowa farmers.
Okay, so you said the 21 feet of space is an arbitrary number. So how did they come up with that being the magic number that they're going to accept?
Actually, it's 24 square feet of space, and if we can figure out the answer to the question, to that question, that would be great. It has no bearing on animal welfare. You know, the typical sow farm today, even employing group housing, provides a really safe and comfortable environment. And most of those farms are around 18 to 19 square feet per sow on average. Many other farmers employ individual stalls in order to specifically meet the needs of the sow. So the requirement in California's Prop 12 of 24 feet is completely arbitrary, has zero scientific backing, and really is not going to improve animal welfare or food safety.
And so, you know, right now you're talking about the 18 feet that already exists. What would this mean for producers here, first of all, if we are looking at having to make that kind of a change?
Well, compliance with Prop 12 will cost individual farmers millions of dollars. The ones least able to bear that cost will be, you know, your small family farms. Steve Meyer, one of our industry's economists, just released a economic impact study of what Prop 12 is going to do to farmers, and he said compliance will start at $850 per sow to, you know, remodel and retrofit those barns. And I don't even think that his study takes into impact the lost productivity, the mortality, the morbidity associated with moving sows into that model. So, yeah, it'll be a huge impact for farmers across the Midwest and the entire region selling into California.
Now, the setups that are in place now are already based on the safety and the health of the sows and for their well-being already, correct?
That's right. You know, there's no single animal housing system that's right for all farms and animals. You know, we look to things like the American Veterinary Medical Association that says, you know, there are advantages and disadvantages to any sow housing system. We look to the Common Swine Industry Audit, which is a third-party voluntary audit developed by veterinarians and animal scientists. You know, also does not endorse a certain space allowance per sow. and instead requires that the sow has the ability to easily lie down. And so it's really, you know, looking at what that individual animal needs and what that farm needs for requirements, and really trusting the farmers and the veterinarians' experience to do the right thing for the animal health and well-being for those sows.
So this was sold to voters as a way to improve animal welfare and food safety. I mean, what kind of hook was used to get voters to believe that what was already going on was not beneficial to the producers when farmers are doing everything they can to protect their investments in the animals themselves?
Yeah, you know, Californians who supported Prop 12 believed it would be an improvement in animal welfare and an improvement in food safety. But I don't feel, especially with these ballot initiatives, that they are oftentimes presented with a complete picture, you know, regarding the trade-offs of different animal housing systems and the complexity that goes into animal care decisions. You know, California indexes really high on pork. They love pork. I think they have about 15% of the U.S. Domestic market for pork consumption. Yet they have so few pork producers in the state. I think the pork consumed in the state of California would take the pork from almost 700,000 sows. And I think California has about 8,000 sows. So that just tells you the sheer impact that their consumption has on U.S. pork producers. It takes a lot of producers collectively to provide pork for that California market. So we definitely don't want to lose that market. Like I said, they over-index for pork, and they're very passionate about their pork in California. So we gotta find a way to make this work.
And to that end, the National Pork Producers and the American Farm Bureau have filed a legal challenge against Prop 12. And tell us a little bit about that process.
Yeah, so we filed an interstate commerce legal challenge for Prop 12, specifically to their California State and the Department of Agriculture, which would ultimately be accountable for ensuring Prop 12 is executed. And so, yeah, we're going to do our best here to fight on behalf of U.S. producers, you know, MPPC and both the American Farm Bureau Federation. We fight for reasonable federal legislation and regulations and, you know, protect the interests of farmers. And so we're going to take a run at this.
And so the argument that you're making with the Farm Bureau is because of the undue, you know, requirements and the economic strain and everything on these farmers to have to upgrade to that, correct?
Correct. The argument is that there is no food safety or animal welfare benefit to the California consumer, and that there is a tremendous amount of harm due to family farmers across the United States to the tune of $480 a sow to even begin with.
Now, of course, this legal challenge is only dealing with Prop 12 in California, but of course, things like this could set a precedent in other states or even in California itself for states to tell the other states how they have to produce their goods to market inside their state. I mean, right now we have one state dictating to the other 49. I mean, what's the message you need to get out to voters in these states, especially these urban voters who maybe don't understand how agriculture works?
Well, I think for any voter, any pork consumer, you know, we have the message of you know, try and understand truly how pork is raised and how your food is raised, and you know, we advocate, you know, if there's questions, to reach out to, you know, your state farm bureau or your state pork producer group, or make sure that the information that you're hearing is peer reviewed and balanced, and make sure you hear the story from the actual farmer and perhaps not a special interest group that has an ulterior motive.
That again was Jen Sorensen of Iowa Select Farms, Vice President of the National Pork Producers Council. We'll be back on Weekend Ag Matters right after the break. Farmers faced a lot of stress during the 2019 growing season, and the holidays can bring about a time of added strain and depression for people who are already feeling overwhelmed. Be on the lookout for those you know in your community who have faced a stressful time. Take time and talk to your neighbors. Go out of your way to make sure they know they are appreciated and cared for. If you're feeling stressed and don't know where to turn, contact the Iowa Helpline at 855-800-1239. A new year is right around the corner, and we here at the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network would like you to join us on that journey. Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters, and now, here's Ken Root.
Have you ever laced up a new pair of boots and thought about the satisfaction of doing so? The smell of new leather, and the feel of the boot on your foot and your ankle? Wearing boots is more than being efficient and economical. They are the foundation of who you are, whether it's a toddler or a man walking the pathway of life. Boots just seem to have an appeal that goes to the core of our being. I recall my 18-month-old nephew showing up at our house proudly wearing a pair of square-toed cowboy boots. He was as likely to put them on the wrong foot as not, and he entertained everyone with his antics. But anything in the wrong hands or the wrong feet can become a weapon. My father, who was known for teasing the grandchildren until they cried, regretted every encounter with that little guy. We watched with stifled laughter as my little nephew learned how to kick and attacked without fear, and he marked Grandpa on just about every visit. New lace-up work boots gave confidence to a shy little boy who took a pair of his mother's cotton gloves and walked sheepishly to the hayfield, asking if he could help. He was met with smiles and encouragement from hot, sweaty men who were moving bales that weighed more than he did. Somehow he was able to push, pull, and wrestle a few across the truck bed and into the haymow, gaining strength, confidence, and a dollar. So he was eager to return in future years to be an equal member of that crew. A teenager in creased Levi's and polished Justin boots was led onto the dance floor and took a few awkward steps on the sawdust with guidance from his mother and older sister as other girls watched him admiringly. That opened up his social life, which culminated in finding the perfect dance partner for life. Boots have been the basic footwear for business, farm work, and play since we set foot in this country. The cargo of the steamboat Arabia that sank on the Missouri River in 1858 and was recovered in 1988 had hundreds of pairs of leather boots on it. All had a straight last, so the wearer could pick right and left as he chose until they were broken in. The story was you put on a new pair of boots, got them wet, and wore them until they were dry. Cowboy boots are the footwear of choice by men from many walks of life. I saw Pete Rose walk across the Field of Dreams a few years ago, wearing a pair of ostrich quill boots. His many injuries caused him to wince with every step, but those boots signaled he had stepped away from who he was and fit better than the spikes that made him famous. The contribution of work boots is overlooked in our daily lives. Imagine doing most jobs without shoes. The rugged nature of construction or farming tasks would be almost impossible without protection for our feet. My wife's father is so caught up in safety footwear that he shies away from anything that doesn't meet his specifications. I suggested he get a pair of Crocs for softness and comfort around the house and yard. And he said, "Do they come with steel toes?" A lady who owns a shoe store in my little town in northeast Iowa sold me a pair of Red Wing, size 14, soft brown boots. She said, "Farmer boots are my bread and butter," as she unboxed and laced a couple of pairs for my examination. She said she has an index for customers who purchase Red Wing boots, so they come in and simply say, "I want what I bought last time." Unfortunately, she quipped, they don't come back for 3 or 4 years. Wearing boots in public says a lot about who you are. Pointed-toe cowboy boots can lead to people questioning your character. Wearing lace-up boots that are torn and discolored indicates you're tough, but you may not be very much of a businessman. Wearing shiny boots that stay shiny indicates you may not work very hard. Wearing your pants on the outside of your boots says one thing, while wearing your pants tucked in so people can see the stitching on the uppers says something else. There are also humorous stories that are augmented by men's chosen footwear. I laugh each time I read Joe Krieger's poem, Traumatic Exposure, as he describes the army of Stinging Nance climbing up his blucher boots, and the late Jerry Clower, the country comedian, who was on a late-night talk show when a feminist screamed at him about the lizard boots and accused him of killing a little animal. "No, ma'am," said Jerry. "This was run over on the way out here by the Greyhound bus, and I got him to stop. I fought off the buzzards and brought him in." My favorite is an example of extreme optimism, as told by a friend and farm broadcaster from North Carolina. Leonard, he said, saw Cecil walking toward him and could see he was limping. As Cecil got closer, Leonard could see he was only wearing one boot. Leonard yelled out, "Cecil, did you lose a boot?" And Cecil smiled and yelled back, "No, I found one." I'm Ken Root on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Thank you, Ken, and that's all for this edition of Weekend Ag Matters. We thank you for tuning in with us here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. You can find replays of this show as well as all of our other content online at iowaagnet.com. Don't forget to find us on Twitter and Facebook at Iowa Ag Radio. On behalf of myself, Anna Hastert, and Ken Root, we thank you for joining us, and we'll see you again next week on Weekend Ag Matters.